Gather the rainy Maria, or any new year to be honey, or papa to look at a tone, or the tire affine ea tato, tihe Maori order. This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
Yes, so as discussed earlier, on the Green Desk today, Mitchell talked to Greenpeace executive Russell Norman, formerly of the Green Party, and an activist within his own right, about the zero carbon bill that began its passage last week. Mitchell began by asking Russell Norman about the positives of the bill.
The positive side on the bill is that it identifies some targets, some aspirational goals, and it's good, I guess, to have aspirational goals.
Yeah. So what were the key reasons for it pretty much not going to achieve anything?
If these aspirational goals are important, then I believe that they are, then you would make sure that the bill also had enforcement provisions in it, so the government could be actually made to achieve the goals or kept to achieving the goals. You'd have some kind of independent powers to the Climate Commission, so that the Climate Commission could actually have power to keep the country focused on achieving the goals. And you'd also have plans in place to reduce emissions, government plans in place to reduce emissions in other sectors of the economy. And of course, we have none of those things.
Yeah, so what sort of mechanisms do you reckon would be, well, suitable to be implemented alongside this?
I think a good model is to think about the Reserve Bank. So the Reserve Bank has a set of medium-term goals that we've all agreed are laudable. Low inflation, financial stability, for example, are two key goals that the Reserve Bank is targeted towards. But they're not short-term goals, they're medium-term goals. It's something we aim for over, you know, a decade or so. And so then they've been delegated, the Reserve Bank's been delegated some independent powers in order to achieve those goals. And the reason for that is that sometimes some of the things the Reserve Bank does in the short term in order to meet these medium-term goals are quite painful. So, for example, higher interest rates in order to meet inflation targets, or minimum deposits, you know, as a percentage of a house, you've got to have a certain minimum deposit. And they introduce that in order to achieve financial stability goals. Now, governments wouldn't do those things left to their own devices because they're too politically unpopular. But because we all agree we want to achieve these medium-term goals, we let the Reserve Bank do these things. And of course, Parliament, if it wanted to, could take those powers away from the Reserve Bank, but it leaves those powers with the Reserve Bank because we think it's in all of our collective interest to achieve those goals we've all agreed on. So the analogy with climate change is, if you had a climate commission, you would all agree that there are certain medium-term goals we want to achieve in terms of emission reductions. And we know that one of the signals that's essential to do that is carbon pricing, just like interest rates are a price on money. Carbon pricing is a key part of how you achieve emission reductions. And so what you do is give the climate commission powers to influence the price of carbon. If the government was not achieving its goals, if it looked like we were going off track, then the Climate Commission could increase the price of carbon, and that would push us towards emission reductions. And it also kind of creates an incentive for the government to use its other policy levers to reduce emissions, because if it doesn't, then the Climate Commission will put up the price of carbon, which again is similar to the Reserve Bank, where if a government's taking actions that drive up inflation, then the Reserve Bank will increase interest rates, which isn't very popular. So those are the kinds of tools you would give the Climate Commission, the ability to influence the price of carbon, if you were serious about reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Obviously, this has been in the works for a long time. Before it actually got put into passage, were these sorts of powers, like, is this what the Commission was meant to have?
Well, I mean, it's modelled off the UK Commission, which was set up about a decade ago. And so that version of this kind of independent commission, it didn't have any powers. It's purely advisory, like the one New Zealand's just adopted,
right.
Is proposing to adopt. But in my opinion, that was before the kind of full implications of the climate emergency were apparent to people, or at least lots of people. And I think time's moved on. We don't need a purely advisory kind of quango publishing yet more tons of reports, we actually need action on climate change.
100%, I agree. I just want to turn to the targets now. I think personally that they're extremely unambitious considering the sort of current technology and the emergency that we're in. Do you think that New Zealand First has had a pretty big role to play in watering these down?
They certainly have, particularly the methane targets. I'm not too hung up on the targets, to be honest. I mean, I guess they're important, but I mean, I'm very interested in policies that reduce emissions. I'm quite leery of targets decades off into the future that politicians can walk around and pat themselves on the back and say we've got very noble targets. I mean, John Key had a target of 50% reductions by 2050. He obviously didn't ever do anything to try to achieve it. But
The one thing for me is that, you know, this is obviously going to go to the select committee, and you've already got people or Federated Farmers have come out, Beef and Dairy New Zealand or whatever they're called, have come out and they're saying that they want 11% by 2050 rather than 11% by 2030. So like these are the sorts of submissions that are going to get put onto the bill when it's getting processed. So I think that, I mean, it could get watered down even further, you know, that's the possibility. So I think it's quite to do with the split gases approach. I mean, that in itself is a bit scary because they're talking about how methane is short term and that's why it should be. But I feel like, you know, if you're looking at something, I mean, for example, the IPCC report that came out, we don't really have the time to, consider short or long term. You know, it takes a decade for methane to move anywhere. And, you know, that's the same amount of time that the IPCC report has given us, eh? Just a question, something that I don't know. When you're putting forward a sort of proposition for, I mean, an organisation or a project or something, you know, if you're putting it through like a consenting process, you sort of have to give effect to part two of the RMA sort of thing. Can this sort of, the same thing happen with the intent of the act that the bill's going in?
The bill's very clear that there's nothing binding in it. So it has some special out clauses, or there's this thing called subpart 5, which is all about how it doesn't mean anything. And so part of that says that if any government agency or any person, any minister or any government body makes decisions or takes actions which are apparently incompatible with the goals or the targets, that doesn't invalidate those actions. And moreover, it says that the climate minister can give guidance to departments to try to make sure that they abide by the targets. But if a department completely ignores that guidance, again, it doesn't invalidate the actions of the department. So they were very careful to make sure it has zero effect on anything that gets done, and that nobody can challenge it. So, just jumping back to the politics of it, but New Zealand First got what they wanted, which was a bill that does nothing, and the Greens got what they needed, which was these big targets. And that's kind of the harsh politics of it.
Yep, right. So in terms of achieving these whatsoever, do you think this can be made possible?
I think it's about people focusing on real policies and trying to get change on real policy. So, for example, we know that, a charge on nitrogen, a nitrogen tax, would have a significant impact. Water charges the same. We know about limits to stocking rates would have a significant impact on in terms of agricultural emissions. Even bringing, because you know currently taxpayers subsidise all the emissions coming out of the agricultural sector, because 100% of all the emissions, the biological emissions, are paid for by the taxpayer under the emissions trading scheme, which costs taxpayers about $1 billion a year or thereabouts. So if we were to remove those subsidies to pollution, that would make a significant difference. So there's a series of real policies that will really make a difference, but clearly this bill is not one of those things.
Do you think there's the opportunity for these sorts of mechanisms to be placed into the bill?
I think that we should definitely lobby to make the bill effective. So, you know, that means things like giving the Climate Commission real powers. It means removing the provisions in the bill that say nothing is enforceable under the law, that removing the bits that say government departments can completely ignore all the targets. So I think that we should advocate for all of those kind of changes. I'm just also quite aware that this is a deal that's already done between New Zealand First and Labor and the Greens. So the scope of moving it is not very much. New Zealand First got what they needed, which was to make the bill have no effect, in, you know, the Greens have got what they needed with the targets.
All right, thank you for that, Russell. Do you want to add anything else?
Look, yeah, I would. I mean, the key thing, it seems to me, is actually going to be people power. Like, you know, how did we get the ban on new oil and gas exploration permits? It was through mass non-violent civil disobedience. It was through direct action. It was through people power. And I think that that remains the case. And that's what we need to focus on. And people should be under no illusions, in my opinion, that this bill will achieve any of those things that we need. And actually, we need to keep campaigning for real policy change.
And, I mean,
and that's only going to become because people campaign on it.
How would you try to get people on board? Because a lot of people, they look at these, I don't know, just targets in their little echo chambers on social media and stuff, and they're quite scared, I feel. How do you recommend getting people on board?
I'm a Greenpeace, right? So we're a campaigning organisation, and we're organising training, you know, this weekend in taking action on campaigning, which people are very welcome to come to. It's Mount Albert Memorial Hall in Auckland at 9 a.m, it's an all-day training session. So, you know, we are very focused on organising campaigning activities and focusing on getting them changed.
That was the Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihe Modi Ora.
That was indeed the Green Desk